Hello, my name is Tucker Johnson, and I am your host today as we experience NIMSY Alive, where we talk about the latest and greatest in translation, localization, interpretation, internationalization, all that fun stuff that global companies need to delight their international customers. On this program, we invite guests who like to have fun and have some value to add for our audience of globalization professionals. I'm always eager to provide a platform to those with a good story or a good data set. So let us know if there are any topics or guests that you think should be on the show and reach out to us at live@nimsy.com and let us know. If you haven't already done so, make sure that you are subscribed to NIMSY Insights. We are coming live today on X, LinkedIn, Facebook, and probably some other places. But of course, most of our audience watches these recordings on LinkedIn and YouTube, where of course all of our old episodes are archived over there. Without further ado, I'm not going to get into any plugs today. Today we're tackling a topic that is moving incredibly fast right now, AI interpreting, especially in high-stakes environments like healthcare, where accuracy is not just a nice-to-have, but it is mission-critical. Now, we've seen a lot of progress in AI translation over the last few years, but interpreting is a different beast altogether. It's real time, it's messy, it's very human, it involves making things like interruptions, background noise, accents, all of these different things that go into a real-life human conversation. It makes it very real. And the challenge is, how do you actually measure quality in that kind of environment? Well, luckily, we have the right guest to talk to us about this today. I am joined by Mr. Brian Forrester from Boostlingo right now. Brian and his team have recently conducted a really interesting AI accuracy study focused on medical interpreting. They used real audio, human expert references, and multiple evaluation frameworks to come up with a story. It's a really interesting study, and stick around because we're going to provide a link to where you can access that later on. But anyways, Brian, welcome to the show. It's so good to have you, sir.
Tucker, great to be here. Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to talk to you about such an important topic.
Yeah, and let's start off. I mean, I tried to give you a brief introduction, but tell us a little bit about yourself and tell us a little bit about Boostlingo for those out there like me who might not be that familiar with the interpreting space.
Yeah, so Boostlingo is a company. We were founded in 2016 back in San Francisco. We are a language interpreting technology company. So we build interpretation management software for both LSCs, but also healthcare providers, law firms, you know, different verticals that we service. And so we build technology to help both manage interpretation services, but also provide the delivery mechanisms for those language interpreting jobs. So think about things like over-the-phone interpreting, video remote interpreting, but also pre-scheduled on-demand interpreting. So we process millions and millions of minutes through our platform every month of human interpreting jobs. And now in the age of AI, of course, AI interpreting is the topic du jour. And so that's a big part of what we're offering as well.
And your model, I know you work directly with and clients, let's call them. Do you also engage with LSPs who are looking to provide a interpreting platform to their clients?
Yeah, actually, LSPs are our largest customer segment. So we provide a multi-tenant software platform for LSPs to manage all aspects of their interpreting business. So think about the complexities of running an interpreting business. You're probably very familiar with the complexities of running a translation business. Well, equally, it's complex to manage all these interpreting jobs, whether they're on-site.
Us localization people, we're the people that couldn't cut it in interpreting. All right? Yeah. So you're not, yes, make all the fun of me that you want for being ignorant. But interpreting is like localization on steroids because you're adding the two extra components into a typical project, which would be time and geography. And in translation, I can have anyone in the world translate something whenever they want. And interpreting is a lot more complex.
It is, you know, with remote interpreting, you're not as landlocked. So you certainly can have an interpreter anywhere.
That's true.
Take that call But a lot of our interpreting that our system manages is that in-person interpreting, where you really do need somebody geographically located near wherever that job is occurring. But the other complexity about interpreting, if you think about it, is just the complexities that are added with spoken word versus, translating documents or localizing a website. You have a lot of different challenges in terms of measuring things like accuracy, which I know we're going to talk about, when it comes to interpreting versus translation work.
Right, and you have a lot of people. You brought up the AI conversation, so it wasn't me, but let's dive right into it. I'm sure you have a lot of
Sure.
customers out there asking you what's being done. Give us a 30,000 foot view of what is being done in the interpreting space currently with in re regards to AI assisted interpreting.
Yeah, so there's kind of two different ways we think about AI and interpreting. There's the AI workflows and the features around the interpreting session. So AI to enhance the human interpreting session. So if you think about like a video remote interpreting session, AI can assist with things like real-time captions or meeting transcripts and summaries. It's still a human interpreter who is doing the work and doing the job, but there's a ton of value that can be added from the AI features that surround that job, if that makes sense. So that's one component of how AI is enhancing human interpreting workflows. And then on the other side, there's actually use cases we're seeing more and more where AI interpreting is actually doing the job instead of the human. But those tend to be in very specific use cases where you have, as you can imagine, lower risk, lower complexity types of conversations.
Yeah, and the nature of interpreting, the client base is a lot different. You're a lot more into those regulated industries and or governmental oversight areas. So how does that interplay into all of this?
You're exactly right. I mean, if you think about the customer base of our LSPs that are our customers and also the clients we work with, they are much more, as you kind of point out, weighted towards regulated industries. So healthcare is a big one, right?
Right.
Over 60% of the people that use interpreting services in the US are in the healthcare markets. That could be a large healthcare system or a dentist office, right? They all there's regulations that require these entities to use interpretation services. But then also you think about other regulated industries like courts and legal, federal government, municipal government, state governments, they all use interpreting services too. So they all have different compliance needs, security concerns when they are thinking about what technology to deploy for their organization.
So, where's the most appetite coming for AI-assisted interpreting? Where would you say, is that coming from the medical field?
It's coming from everywhere. Look, I mean, recently you've seen legislation passed at the federal level, which has cut some spending and healthcare subsidies. So you have more and more conversations at the board level, for example, at these large healthcare systems, where they're challenging people to cut costs. How can we drive automation internally? How can we drive down costs, but still preserve quality. Like quality is still the most important thing when it comes to things like language services. But they are much more open-minded to AI interpreting than they were even just a year ago, Tucker. Interestingly enough, we did a survey about a year ago across our entire customer base, and we found that like 80% of our customers had a negative reaction, almost an allergic reaction, when you ask them or even introduce the concept of an AI interpreter, right? And it makes sense. I mean, do you think about some of the conversations that go through our platform? These are patients talking to their doctor about cancer diagnosis or very complex legal settings. You can understand why customers would be like, "We're not, you're crazy. We're not using AI in these types of conversations." But it's interesting, we ran that same survey back just a month ago, and what we found is 60% of respondents now are at least open-minded to having the discussion, with 20% of respondents enthusiastic. The sentiment is enthusiastic, meaning they want to use AI across the board. But of course, it depends on the customer, right? And in some cases, We have customers where in certain settings it makes sense to use an AI interpreter. Think about a front desk scenario at a healthcare clinic. They're just checking in for their appointment. It's not a complex conversation. You know, it's a form fill. Oftentimes AI can handle those really well, and they can save a lot of money because they're not using human interpreters in that case. But when it comes to the point of care, patient talking to the doctor, that's a higher risk conversation. Most likely in that scenario, you're going to want a human in the loop. You're going to want a human interpreter providing the interpreting in that session. But the AI is still going to play a big role even in that setting.
Absolutely. I mean, and there's so many, when we think of AI, it's funny because I feel like when I have conversations with interpreting folks like you, in the interpreting world is kind of just moving behind the localization world by like 5 to 10 years. And I don't mean that disrespectfully, saying like, oh, you're behind the times. I'm saying it's because the technology, so we have machine translation and localization, and that's a much less complex thing to do. So of course, AI interpreting is more complex. It's going to trail behind machine translation. But I say all that to say that it's interesting because all of these conversations that you're describing, I feel like I've been having them for the last 10, 15, 20 years in the machine translation space. And it's the same curves are at play. Initially, there is this big negative response perception to MT. And you can have a lot of conversation about whether how warranted that negativity was, right? But a lot of that we still see to this day, this bias against MT. And the reality is, machine translation ain't what it used to be. Technology has come a long way, so it's a much more viable solution out there. And that does not surprise me that you're starting to see people enthusiastic about at least learning more about AI adoption, because a lot of people are getting this directive like from the top. CEOs or directors or VPs are saying, we need AI. How are we going to do it?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And no offense taken, we actually have these conversations all the time internally. I think like 10 years ago, the prediction was there wouldn't be any translators left in the world, certainly by the year 2026, right? And now look today, there's probably well more translators employed today than there was back in 2010. So technology doesn't always impact labor like you conventional wisdom would make you believe. But you're exactly right. Interpreting always trails translation trends a little bit by 5 to 10 years because interpreting has that extra layer of complexity that written word may not have. And to us as an organization, we actually see this as a huge opportunity for innovation because our company from our roots have always viewed ourselves as a technology company first that provides interpretation services, but it's all about building better mousetraps in the industry.
Well, I remember a day before you provided translation services. It was just a
Yeah.
so yeah, your DNA is that, and that sets you up as an advantage here because you're not encumbered by that linguist DNA, with all respect to my linguist in the audience. But I think we know what we're talking about here. Tell me about, I want to go back to measuring interpretation. I'm actually working on several projects right now measuring machine translation output quality and all of that stuff. But as you covered in your intro and I touched upon, there are certain complexities to measuring quality when it comes to interpretation. Can you just walk us through, like, first of all, historically, how do you measure quality in interpretation? And then
Well,
how is that changing?
I mean, those are really good questions. I mean, first of all, historically, it's been very challenging to measure quality. Think about interpreting. A lot of what we do are on-demand interpreting calls. The vast majority of those calls are not recorded unless our customers request them to be recorded. We will record them for quality assurance. But you're talking about hundreds of thousands of calls that go through our platform. It's not practical or scalable to listen to every single one of those calls and measure, have humans review them for quality. And the reality is our customers can review every call, but only maybe 10% of calls get reviewed by the customer. So you're looking at a small sample set of the overall calls that are going through our platform. And then another challenge with measuring quality historically is it's been human driven, right? You could have two human reviewers, review the exact same interpreting call and come away with a very different review because it's very subjective. So it's been very hard historically to set a standard of what quality even means as it relates to language interpreting. It's been much easier in the translation space because you have written word, but with real-time dialect and conversations, what does quality even mean? Is accuracy enough? Because you've got to think about things like, what was the technical quality of the call? Because you could have an amazing interpreter, but if the audio feed is cutting out or the video feed is cutting out, it's going to be a poor quality experience. What about things like turn-taking mechanics? We talk about this all the time. It's not just about the accuracy of the interpreter, but are they pausing? If somebody speaks and the interpreter takes a minute to respond, that's not good workflow. So there's a lot of different elements when it comes to measuring quality. And historically, the industry's never had a standard. One of the things we're really excited about is we see it moving towards a standard.
Okay, so talk to me about the standard. Who's behind that? Is it just kind of an organic thing, a grassroots thing that's coming up? Is there a standards board that's been created or?
Well, yeah, I mean, there has been this investment in the industry at large, writ large, in this AI task force in interpreting,
Yes.
where you've probably heard of this, and it's been actually a very impactful board that has gotten together and started to create at least a framework for how you measure things like risk in different conversations and different use cases and how you measure quality. So that's an important
Is this
kind of
the Safe AI Task Force,
the Safe AI Task Force,
which
right?
I am not involved with. NIMSY is not involved with this, but I will never give away the opportunity to plug this just because I believe in it. So Safe AI, what is it? Safe AI dot something.
Yeah, I could go find it, but they actually put out this really great framework for organizations to use around, making a decision framework. Like, should I use AI in this case? Should I not? And that's not actually a BoostLingo driven, right? That's an industry driven thought leadership initiative that has been really impactful, I think, to the industry at large. But BoostLingo, we actually think we are thought leaders here when it comes to creating the standard. And I know we're going to talk about this study we just recently did. But this is a big step in that right in that direction of creating a standard in quality that I think has been sorely missing up until now.
Well, let's take a look at this study because I teased it in the intro and you mentioned it right now. And I do just want to mention, you can go over to the BoostLingo. This is all out there. I think you put it in your email and you can get a copy of it if you want to follow along at home with this. But maybe you can just walk us through this study. What's the problem this study's trying to solve here?
Yeah, well, I think it's trying to solve how do you measure AI interpreting accuracy? Because, when you think about it, and we kind of touched on this, like AI interpreting, there's been a lot of organizations out there that have claimed to have high AI accuracy when it comes to not just interpreting, not just our competitors, but, outside of our industry, voice APIs. They say our AI has really high quality, but how are they measuring that? How are they measuring the accuracy? And I think a lot of these studies that we've seen in the past historically, well, first of all, they don't always use real-world conversations to measure accuracy. So they're taking like this sort of scripted environment, and they're putting in conversations that might be easy for AI to interpret correctly. And so they're able to skew the results a little bit. Or they're using a data set that's not significantly, big enough, right? So the end value is not big enough. Or it might just be like they're not using enough metrics. We see a lot of studies that come out that are like single metric studies. So they're using something like they're measuring the word similarities between English and Spanish as the way they're measuring accuracy. Well, of course, accuracy is more complex than just the word similarity. Is the meaning of the word maintained? Like, is that there's something called like the ability to The professionalism and tone of the AI interpreter,
Yep.
right? So if you have an AI interpreter that sounds like a robot, even if they get all the words accurate, it's not going to be a high quality experience. And so we try to use a lot of different elements when we're talking a multidimensional kind of framework when measuring AI accuracy and a multidimensional methodology in this study that I don't think we've seen before.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, and it's not my space, but just thinking about this is quality in interpreting. It's like, let's go back to what is the intent behind the what we're trying to do here. And with translation, that intent can vary widely, whether it's user documentation or technical documentation versus marketing material. The intent is different, right? And I can imagine accuracy. At the end of the day, accuracy, especially in a medical setting, is going to be the number one thing. But of course, there's those other variables. There's if it's lines full of static and I can't hear someone, then it's not a, then the intent has not been fulfilled, right? And I can also think of, just sensitive situations. There's some sensitive conversations that happen in a doctor's office, right? Are those handled with empathy, right? It's weird
Yeah.
to ask that question. Is the are the machines reacting empathetically? But it's a variable that requires thinking about.
It's an important question. And I should note that this study didn't actually measure things like empathy in these conversations, although that is an important component of quality. This was much more looking at just accuracy in general. But the reason I think this study was so interesting, number one, we use human interpreter, professional human interpreters to set what we kind of call internally here the ground truth, like a benchmark across all these real world conversations to make sure that our AI, these different metrics we're testing across, had a standard to kind of follow.
So you kind of
And like I
use
meant,
that as like the gold standard, the benchmark to be weighed against, right?
exactly. Yeah. And again, like I mentioned, we use real world conversations. I think there was something like 258 real medical conversations. Of course, we redacted the PHI out of these conversations. There's no sensitive and patient identification in these calls, but they're real life calls, which means you have things like background noise, you have people talking over each other, interruptions. And so how does an AI interpreter behave when they get interrupted mid-sentence, right? I mean, so that's part of what we're measuring here with accuracy that I don't think, if you're not using real-world conversations, you miss out on a lot of that, measurement that's so critical, when you're measuring, accuracy.
And just to be clear, to clarify the conversation here, when we're talking about measuring accuracy, are we talking about measuring the accuracy of AI generated interpretations, or are we talking about measuring human interpreters?
Well, that's an interesting question. For this study, we were looking at AI interpreting accuracy. So we
Got
were
it.
using human conversations and we were seeing how our AI interpreting, our AI interpreter, Duolingo's AI interpreter, stacked up against Meta, open source AI model, which is, a very well-known, widely used, interpretation service. And we also stacked it up against one of our not to be named on this podcast competitors.
Okay.
We stacked it up against, sort of this open source Meta model, which is broadly used and one of our competitors in the market. But we measured it against three different metrics that were looking at different things. And this is why I think it's so important to point out that a lot of the studies we've seen are not multi-metric. They just look at one piece of accuracy, like word similarity, or something like faithfulness, where you're looking at was anything omitted or added in that shouldn't have been, or did the AI hallucinate something that it shouldn't have? But in our system, we're measuring all of these things. So we use something called Blue
But see,
as one of,
here's the problem, Brian, is
yeah.
if you measure all of them, then you can't cherry pick the ones that give you the data that you want.
That's right. That's
Right?
exactly right. And we think there might be some cherry picking going on.
What? I didn't say that. I did not say that. I'm just saying. Okay, I'm sorry. Go on. Go on.
No, but you're exactly right. You know, if you're just looking at one aspect of something, it's easier to kind of get the data to tell you what you want it to.
Right.
And so we use these three different metrics. One is BLU, which is really measuring that data, that word similarity aspect of these conversations. So this metric was just looking at, were the words similar from Spanish to English and from English to Spanish across all of these conversations, these real world conversations. BLU was a metric that was developed by IBM back in 2002. So it's been around a long time, but
Yeah.
it's an important aspect of accuracy. We also use Comet Kiwi. I'm not sure if that's something you're familiar with, but it's a standard that was, I think, developed by Unbabel in 2020. It's very well regarded way to measure what I was talking about before, this idea of faithfulness. Did the conversation omit or add anything, or alter any of the meaning? Did the AI interpreter do any of that it shouldn't have, right? So it's scoring these conversations very differently than the blue metric was. And then on top of that, we used a more modern Microsoft metric, which looks more at meaning, you know, full meaning. It's and is the meaning preserved? Because even if the words are similar, with the wrong context, the meaning may not be preserved. So you're look we have three different kind of metrics that are judging these conversations in very different ways. And so what we wanted to do is we wanted to look at, is there a correlation on how Boostlingo's AI interpreter performs against our competitor and against this meta model across all three metrics, right? How did we perform across all three? Not just one, but across all three.
Well, spoiler alert, this page says Boost Lingo in the lead. So
But we were very happy with the results. I mean, but the
I imagine
results
if the results were different, you probably wouldn't have published the study, but the results are what they are, so slap it in a PDF.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, our engineers are very honest people. They were
I
pushing us to
yeah.
publish it no matter what they said, but
Sure. Yeah, engineers are like that.
we were very happy with the results. I mean, statistically significant, significantly, Boostlingo performed across all of the metrics better than both the competitor and Meta. But I do want to point out, you know, it's not this study was more comprehensive than anything we've seen to date.
Yeah.
But accuracy is just one way to measure quality when it comes to AI interpreting. So there's a lot more we can still do
Right,
to
'cause
make
like
sure.
you're saying you're doing a multi-modality or multi-methodology, all the looking at all of these different aspects, and it's the most comprehensive so far. That having been said, I can think of five more to add for, and you said like these studies haven't really typically been done. What's the reason for that? I mean, and I can give my reason because I should be pointing at me. We're NIMSY Insights. We should be doing studies. That's our job, right? But
Yeah.
why do you think this is an area that hasn't been researched as much?
Yeah, I think, that's a really good question. I think traditionally, there's not been a huge appetite for AI interpreting at large because the customers haven't wanted it. There hasn't been as much of a demand. It's hard to measure quality in interpreting. It's very hard to do to bring all these different elements together. You need obviously the right kind of data science minds behind the scenes that are, focused on this, machine learning engineers that understand how all of these different metrics work. You need the right AI technology pipeline in the background that's able to measure these conversations, right? So there's a whole technology layer underneath this that's required that we just don't think anybody's built up until this point. But I also think, look, I always joke with people. 5 years ago, I think it might have been Facebook. There was some sort of viral video where they had the headsets on, and it was like a guy talking to his girlfriend in a park, and they're talking about how these AI, they
Every
are,
2 years, there's some new gadget, some new Super Bowl commercial says, like, okay, whatever. Yeah.
exactly. And so, I would get friends, texting me saying, "Oh man, how's Boostlingo going to compete with these guys?" But the reality is that that AI didn't really work in
Yeah.
practice. And even I have, everybody has the new AirPods, and has tried the translation capabilities in the AirPods, and they work pretty well in very simple conversations. Like if you're at a restaurant ordering dinner, assuming there's not a lot of background noise, but you can see how quickly they stop working.
Yeah.
And so when you think about the types of interpreting jobs that go through Boostlingo, it's very complex. And so building the right quality framework to test AI quality is not easy.
So, yes, and I told you I'd give you my input. I mean, you stole most of my answers, except I would just say, like you said, it's hard to test, and I would expand upon that and say it's resource intensive, aka expensive to test, because you have to gather all of these resources and pay for interpretations. Oh, but I'm thinking human translation. I'm not thinking AI translations. So that's significantly less. But to test human or human interpreters, you've got to pay someone to sit there. Traditionally, you've got to pay someone to sit there and listen to it, right? Or if you're using this model where you're using a benchmark translation to base everything else off of, you've got to pay someone to translate that and review it and make sure it's a good benchmark. So it's just, and then there's a second component of and why and what for and so what? What am I going to use this information for? So I'm going to throw this back to you. Would you recommend that, like clients of yours periodically, like once a year or biannually, check in and run a quality assessment, or like, or what do I do with this information?
Yeah, I mean, I think generally speaking, especially in the age of AI, quality is non-negotiable. I talked about before how hard it was to measure historically, how hard it was to measure quality in interpreting, right? But
Right.
in just a few days ago, I was on a podcast or I was on a webinar. We were talking about the Boostlingo Assure product, which is, another shameless plug here, but which is allows you to have every call, whether it's a human interpreter call or an AI interpreter call, measured. We have AI judges in this quality layer, which can score every call, can actually benchmark human calls versus AI interpreter calls. And what you can learn is that, hey, in this use case, humans perform a lot better than AI. But in this other use case, AI is just as good as
Yeah.
humans. Because
So.
maybe it's not as complex, the risk isn't as high, and it's different for every language, right? It might be as good as humans for Spanish, but when you test it in Somali, it's way worse than humans.
So many variables out there, and of course, not all languages have the same amount of training data. So the engines aren't the same across multiple different factors. I want to turn the conversation away from like, all right, technical, practical, what can we do now? Let's go a little like futurist here. You said, because we mentioned 10 years ago, supposedly translators were all going to be out of work and we were all going to be starving and begging, right? And 10 years later, that didn't happen.
No.
What do you see 10 years from now? Because I've been around a long time in this industry, and I've been through the crises, the panics, the mass hysterias of, I've heard people 20 years ago who left the industry because MT was going to replace their job in 5 years, right? So I've been through all of these. Nothing's really stuck, right? AI's here to stay, I think. AI has staying power. AI is not the metaverse. AI is not
Right.
blockchain.
Definitely not the
Right?
metaverse.
It's not the latest thing, the hype train. There's something here, but it's not what everyone thinks it is. Do I know what it is? No, I'm not smart enough. But I know enough to say it's not what everyone thinks it is.
It's not enough. Who am I to say I know exactly what the world will be like in 10 years? I certainly don't.
Well, you're
I always
Brian
start off
Forrester,
that.
CEO of Boost Lingo. That's why I
I
asked
know, but
you.
I always start that question off, well, if the robots haven't killed us yet, comma.
Yes, okay. Important
So,
caveat.
important caveat, assuming we're all still here. Look, I think there's generally an unease initially, anytime there's this huge technological revolution period, like you said, you saw it with machine translation, but you can go back to cloud computing and mobile and computers. I mean, there's always kind of this initial panic, but the TAM is expanding for the language industry at large. We know that half of interpreting jobs are unvended, meaning half of the demand to get an interpreter, there's not an interpreter available. That's either scenario number one, so they can't find an interpreter to do the work, or they can't afford to have a human interpreter do that work.
Well, that's just the thing, is like there's work out there that's not being fulfilled because the cost benefit doesn't work out. It's not worth paying a human interpreter to do it. This is where the technology comes in, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, think about the language ex access expansion opportunity that AI brings with it. So that particular, you think about the patient journey at the hospital today. Well, when the patient checks in, they don't speak English. They go to the hospital. They check in into the front desk. Most healthcare systems are not using an interpreter at that intake environment. So that person struggles to get access to the services they need. Then they go in and they see the doctor. Well, there usually is a provider, a language service provider tablet there, or some way to get access to a remote interpreter in that setting. Then they get checked into the hospital, their bedside. They need to order food. They need to order something from the nurse. Usually, at that point in the patient journey, there's no interpreting services available because they tend to be shorter conversations. And you know, the hospitals can't get roll the iPad cart into the room in time. All of those steps could AI could bridge that language gap, right? And it's a lower cost. But it's not just that, it's across the board. We see tons of examples where AI can expand language access. So human interpreters are still going to be needed for a very long time. I would assume that if there's a scenario where human interpreting is not needed in the world, none of us have jobs. You know, everything is automated at that point. Maybe the robots have killed us at that point.
Either the robots or the four horsemen, pick one, right?
Yeah,
But
yeah.
we've got bigger problems to worry about.
Exactly. But the AI interpreting is getting better. I mean, it is getting much better. We see the different LLMs getting big improvements in their voice. APIs. We see a lot of third-party vendors building really cool abilities, and we see our just some of the key custom features we've been able to build in our own technology pipeline just get better and better as we have more data to tune these models on. So, just a really exciting time from a technology standpoint. I love geeking out on this stuff. So.
It's an exciting time, and not to like glaze my guest too much, but it's an exciting time, and Boostlingo really kind of you hit it at the right time, coming in as a tech-focused interpreting solution, right? Because I've seen, I firmly believe the generality, there are exceptions to the rule, but in my observations as an industry observer, it's kind of two different types of provider, language provider companies out there culturally. There's the tech-focused companies, and then there's the language-focused companies. And it usually depends upon who the founder was. Was the founder a translator or a tech geek, right? And what a time to be a tech-focused language services provider, with everything that's going on right now. I would not want, because I see other companies out there that have historically been, language focused. They're struggling to catch up now. They're doing fine. They're doing right. I'm not trying to disparage them, but there's a struggle, and you guys are already ahead of the curve.
Yeah, we work with a lot of really amazing LSPs that are very tech forward. So most of our partners, we think, get it. Some of them need to be a little bit more convinced,
Well, yeah, they get it because they have a solution. They're working with bootleg. Exactly.
they get it, but you know, they have to go convince their customers why they should use AI or not. And I think there's that value proposition. If you imagine you're a healthcare company. And you've been using human interpreting for the last 5 years, and you're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on human interpreting. How scary it must be to think about replacing some of that, not all of it, but some of it, or supplementing it with AI interpreting. When you think about the high stakes of some of these conversations, you have to be able to sell not just on price. They're never going to buy it just because it's cheaper. You need to be able to show them quality. And this is where, everything we've talked about so far is so important.
And compliance, which
Yes.
is related to, but not always the same as quality, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. It's kind of like there's overlap between those two, but they're also very different. I
Exactly.
mean, in healthcare, they care about things like
No, I
HIPAA and
mean,
SOC 2.
and you asked me, like, imagine that you're a healthcare provider or a company. It's like, yes, but I can't be a healthcare company. I can be a CFO. Or I can be a doctor, or I can be in whatever. So it's like you have all of these different stakeholders, and they all care about different things, right? The CFO wants to
Totally.
save money. The chief compliance officer wants to make sure that accuracy. The CIO or CTO wants to make sure InfoSec is all up to speed. So you got to be able to sell on all of those. And
Yeah, and it's not just AI interpreting, right? When you think about IT departments buying any AI solution, they're going to ask about quality. So, yeah, that's
Well,
exactly right.
one of my questions is, and this is kind of staying in that, like, hey, what do you think is going to happen in the future kind of phase of this conversation, is because I think about this a lot for these quote unquote low value interpretation use cases, the ordering. Let's take it out of the healthcare. Let's take it to the guy, trying to order a taco on the street and he doesn't speak the
Yeah.
language, right? These are the ones that those overly funded commercials every 2 years usually address, right? But
Right.
there's one thing, I don't think their technology is there yet, but there's one thing that I think they get right, which is I think ultimately the power of language access for these low value engagements is going to be in the hands of the actual user. So it's not going to
I
be,
think you're right. I think you're right. I mean, of course, it depends on the industry and the use case, but I keep going back to even the healthcare setting. Not the guy ordering the taco, but the patient checking in to the doctor's appointment. Historically, Boostlingo's apps have always been what we call requester driven, meaning it's the nurse or the doctor or the staff using the app. It's not the patient using the app. We actually see that changing to, empowering the patient to do that themselves in some of these situations. And that gets to your point. So the guy ordering the taco, as well, there's more of that sort of consumer aspect to it. So we absolutely think there's a big opportunity there to expand language access. I think, like you said, a lot of these infomercials every couple of years that come out, that technology works in really short form conversations, but it breaks down pretty quickly. And it's not just because of the accuracy. It's all the other things I mentioned. How does it handle background noise? How does it handle turn-taking mechanics between different speakers? And so there's a lot of value Boostlingo's layering on top of just the AI interpreter to make these sessions work really
Yeah,
well.
there's a lot of this stuff that us language nerds like think about, but no one else is ever going to think about. And that's okay. They're not language nerds. They don't need to be language nerds, right? It's
Right.
the cross that we bear. It is our burden to bear. Like, I can't watch a movie about languages without being like, well, that's not very realistic. I'm watching Project
Yeah.
Hail Mary, and I'm like, you need to watch Project Hail Mary because they have AI interpreting in it.
Oh, okay. I'm
That's
gonna write that
your
down.
next blog post. Yes,
Okay.
he
Project Hail Mary. Got
on
it.
his laptop, he writes a script to be able to communicate with an alien crab creature in like a day. So there you go. There's your next blog post, a
Yeah.
teardown of
We don't have an AI interpreter for alien crab creature as a language yet,
that.
but we could maybe develop that.
Well, sir, I'm looking at the time here. This has been super. I love talking about interpreting because, like I always say, I'm a loc guy by background who has been exposed to interpreting only enough to know that I don't have what it takes to do what you do. So, I always enjoy these conversations, though.
Tucker, it's been so much fun talking to you.
Yeah, okay, let me just I want to so boostlingo.com, all my plugs here. Go follow Brian on LinkedIn, of course, follow Nimsy, all of that stuff. Boostlingo.com. There's Not just this report, but that we've been talking about today, but there's a bunch of other good materials and resources available over there, so go check it out. Brian, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Tuck. I really appreciate it.
All right, I'll take us out. Ladies, gentlemen, chat, we are out of time for today. But if you enjoyed this NIMSY Live experience, then join us next time by going to our LinkedIn page, checking out the future events, and signing up. You'll be notified when we go live on those future events. Also, if you follow NIMSY Insights, you'll be notified when we schedule future events. So that's how you stay in the loop. Of course, you can always reach out to us at info@nimsy.com. I look forward to next time to continue this conversation. Cheers.